Hello and welcome to Conversations from the Adoption and Fostering podcast. In this podcast, I speak to adoptive dad Dan. With his wife, he adopted a child after failed infertility treatment. Dan shares their experience of approval and matching, as well as how he then went on to build a support group for adoptive dads, which now has over 50 members. As always, if you have experience of adoption, fostering or special guardianship from any perspective, and would like to share that on the podcast, please get in touch through the Facebook or Twitter page, or you can email us at andfpodcast@gmail.com.
My name's Dan. I class myself as a fortunate adopter. I'll explain why I say that in a bit. We came to the adoption process because my wife, without going into too much details, was unable to have children naturally. We went through the process of IVF, and long short of the tool, we were unsuccessful there. Adoption was always something we had considered as a potential route should other avenues not work out. But it was about a year, 18 months after our last failed round of IVF that I was out at work walking about, and I saw a white van with a sign on it from our local authority saying consider adoption and fostering and the phone number. So I thought, okay, maybe it's a bit of a sign. Gave it a call, and literally that night they were having a more information evening. Rang the wife and said, what are we doing tonight? Skeptically, she said nothing. And we went along. And it was after we came away from that that we looked at each other and went, yes, this is the way we're going to go, or what we'd like to pursue. That was at Christmas 2017, if my memory serves me right. We filled out the forms of interest, got approved, got provided with a stage one social worker who did a cracking job, to be fair. She got us through that stage quickly. It was very, very therapeutic, we found, the whole process, and made us realise, myself in particular, how fortunate my upbringing had been with my parents and my family unit, that just reaffirmed that this is what we wanted to do. Mm. Then we got through to stage one and then met our stage two social worker, which was initially, it was a little bit bumpy. We weren't sure about them. They weren't sure about us, I think. Nothing specific, just a general feeling. But having said that, now, as we look back on it, we've built a really good relationship with them. And we wouldn't have what we've got now without their input and arm of restraint and a kick up the backside as well at times. And words of wisdom, so we wouldn't have what we had without her. That whole stage one process and stage two till we got to approval panel was pretty much spot on a year.
Right.
And in that panel, I've got quite a dominating personality, I know that. But when I'm unsure, nervous, I do get very quiet. But through that whole panel, I was sat in the middle. I've got my wife sitting to one side of me, the adoption, our social worker sitting to the other side. And even I got a couple of kicks off the wife under the table to say, don't say what I think you're going to say, and little things like that. But it's probably the most nerve-wracking 15 minutes that felt like 15 hours of my life when they're sitting around asking me those questions. And went out to another room, and literally within 5 minutes, a social worker came back in saying it was a unanimous yes. I'm not overly emotional, but I'm not afraid to admit I broke down in tears. I was a wreck. Just that relief that we had of five or six people who didn't know you, didn't know anything about us, basically turned around and said, yes, we think you could be good parents to a child or children out there down the line, sort of a job interview to become a parent, which was a little bit funny. went into, obviously, family finding, stage then, where we took a little bit of time over Christmas where we didn't really do anything. We just wanted to, that was October, November that we got approved. 2017 we got approved. And yeah, we didn't do very much. We got access to Linkmaker in the new year, and did possibly the worst thing you can do on Linkmaker, which was a general search and read every single story, which was emotionally heartbreaking. For anyone that's done it will know exactly what I mean there. And it was the social worker that said, narrow it down, be so very specific about what it is, be honest with yourself. I'm not looking at what you've put down and judging you. No one else is. You've got to put what's right for you. And that was a bit of a breath of fresh air, to be honest, because it was reassuring that we're not being judged anymore for anything we might say yes or no to. Registered interest in a few. One child we had was, we've stopped the interest just because we weren't right for them. We didn't feel they were right. We were right for them. Another one, they weren't right for us. It was a lovely child. It just wasn't the right match of what they needed. We couldn't provide. Yeah. We were linked to a relinquished child within our local authority, and ended up going with another couple simply because they lived further away from birth parent. Then we got someone from our now daughter's area got in touch with us, asked if we'd be interested in a little girl, and they sent through an anonymised CPR at that point because they were still waiting for the final order. It ticked all the boxes at that stage. Our social worker had a chat with the family finding social worker, and I guess, as we all know, there's a code that social workers know, that read between the lines of what's being said. They say it without saying it, in more information. And our social worker said, that's a really, potentially really good match. When the court order came through, or for the final adoption order went through for her to go up for adoption, we were given the full information. And it was a perfect match from what we fell in love with her the moment we saw a picture.
Can I ask you a question? Because you described, sure. Often people talk we hear a lot about preparation and the assessment process, and people talk about it being intrusive, and you know, some people find it very difficult. And it sounds like, I'm sure it wasn't, you know, silky smooth all the way through, but it sounds like it was relatively straightforward. But then it sounds like you had you've gone through an awful lot of children that you were sort of get close to, not close to. Was that difficult, sort of going through that process?
It was. So going through the whole process was filling out the paperwork side of things. We do your family chart. That was very therapeutic. So it makes you take stock of what you've got and what you've got to offer.
Yeah.
And we found that oddly reassuring, because we didn't. When do you actually sit back and think of everything you've got in your life and to what you could offer someone? So we found that reassuring, that we've got something here that we can offer to a child. It was tough in the initial stages of being linked with children, but I think because we'd had the heartaches we'd had throughout the IVF, we held ourselves back a little bit from any hope or chances. We tried to have that separation. This is a possibility, that's all it is. We didn't pin our hopes, which was hard. Which was very hard, especially when you've got friends and family being over the moon that they've got birth children coming along and pregnancies coming along. It's very hard. I can only imagine, and even to this day, I don't think I understand how my wife felt truly through all of that. No matter how much she tells you, I just don't think I'll ever understand how she could feel through all of that. But when we got the full CPR of our now daughter came through, it just felt right. Everything we read about it, every picture we saw about her, everything just felt right. The only problem we had was that it was an out of county, And it wasn't just the county next door. It was a good old trek down to her county. So what was the plan was that we would have a lot of bump into meetings initially, just to see, and we were just introduced as her foster carers friends. They, foster carers had a big family that were in and out all the time anyway, so it wasn't something new to her. She'd had that. And literally we walked in to meet everyone, and she was asleep at the time in her crib, starfished, like arms all over the place, legs all over the place, as 18-month-olds do. And literally walked in, and from that moment on, she had me wrapped around her little finger. I don't know. It just everything felt right. Even my wife was, yes. If they would have let her take her home then and there, we would have more than happily. It just felt right. And I say, so I've got a massive smile on my face. I'm looking at our coffee table, and there's a massive picture of her from nursery and from the class photos that they take. That's just come home. I hadn't even noticed it up before. It just felt right. The match felt right. The actual process of going through everything felt good. The introductions, well, the medical examiners, we do all of that, felt right. Even at matching an approval panel for her, they didn't ask any questions. They asked questions about the name, obviously. She's got a unique name, so we modified it without changing it. We'd always had the idea of adding my wife's name, if it was a girl, adding my wife's name into a middle name, and if it was a boy, we ended up with adding mine into the middle name, just to help with, down the line, identity and ties. So my wife added her middle name in, into her name. That was the only thing we said we would do, and they were happy with that, and that was a very quick matching approval yes as well. Our social worker through all of this was absolutely amazing. We had a few issues with our daughter's social working team, but I think that stemmed from, and it's still a bugbear now that I don't understand why it happens, our county, our agency of county local authority and hers operate off two completely different systems, and there's no interchangeability, there's no generic system to be used for communication, let alone, the only thing they had in common was Link Maker, and that does make me question why, but that's another topic. Once we got it down, official introductions was a week down there, where they put us up in a hotel, and we spent 5 days, or 4.5 in total, completely living in a hotel, spending as much time we could, which I'm glad for, because if we'd had to drive back, it's emotional. It was each night we were absolutely wiped out physically and emotionally more than anything. Following week, they brought her to us, and she walked in and has been here ever since that first night of the second week of intros. She spends more time sleeping with the dog, who get on like a house on fire, those two. And it just went through from there, really, her introductions. And it went quite smoothly, really, apart from a few little things. There's always going to be hiccups along the way, but it went quite smoothly. Our biggest mistake is she came home Halloween, was her first night. Our biggest mistake that we'd made with her was that Christmas. We'd done the initial lockdown and periods of restrictive visitation and for bonding. We asked too much of her. She'd met all of Jess's, my wife's family already, and she'd met my family. But Christmas Day, we did the morning with my wife's, and then it got up in the afternoon, up to my parents, and stayed there. We forgot her dummy. And could we find a dummy anywhere for her to go to sleep with as a pacifier? No chance in hell. Not where my parents live, in the middle of nowhere. Couldn't find anything that would do. So literally it's 2 o'clock in the morning. We were driving back home with everything because it just wasn't, we'd asked too much of her. And she let us know. She let us know.
So it sounds like, I mean, there's no such thing as a straightforward adoption, but it sounds like, you know, you've tracked along the what people would expect or hope that the process would be. I know when you first got in touch with me, you talked about some of the support group that you've set up. So I'd be interested to know about that and if you could tell us a little bit about why you did that and kind of what it looks like.
Yeah, well, we'd always... They have information evenings where we adopted through, where they have support groups put in play and groups that you may find useful further down the line. And there was a dad's group that was advertised. We never actually saw well nor met anyone there. But I thought, okay, that could be something quite useful. But didn't really think of it at the time. And then last May, June time last year, I was at work just plodding along and I can't remember why, but I suddenly was thinking about our journey so far. I thought, we've been okay, we've done all right, not everyone can be like this. Maybe it's time to, I just thought, it might be quite nice to be able to speak to some other dads about some of the stuff we've had. Is there any help I can give to them? Is there any help they can give to us?
Yeah.
So I got in touch with the social workers and said, your dad's group, is it still a thing? Because I had an email and I'd sent them an email, but I hadn't heard anything back. So is this still a thing? And if not, how do we go about kicking it off again? Because I was just thinking, if I'm in this position and thinking like this, there's got to be other dads out there who could possibly be of that mindset as well. So I sent the email off, and within about 5 minutes, I had a phone call from a social worker. He said, there isn't, but I really want to get this done. This is something I've been trying to push for a while. I've got another dad who's interested in setting this up. Would you be willing to sit down and have a chat with him about sorting something out? I said, yep, sure, not a problem. That evening, we were on the phone talking about it, setting things up, just talking about the possibility. By the end of that phone call that night, we had a Facebook page set up that we used as information. We had an email account set up. We sent a flyer was sent out to dads that our social services team had on their network. And we had half a dozen by the end of the week into the group. We've now reached over 51 dads in our group now in just over a year. And I think during COVID has possibly been the benefit to us in setting that group up this last year, because we've been looking out for other avenues of support, especially during the times. We have Skype meetings or catch-ups during the pandemic. We were having those 2-3 times a year. And when possible, we meet up at the park. Everyone brings a deck chair, everyone brings a little bit of snacks, cans or whatever, and we just sit around and have a talk and a chat and unburden and ask for advice. We have speakers come in that we think may be beneficial. So we've had virtual schools come in and talk to aspects of what they can do to help and EHCP plans and things like that they've got experience with. We've got, it's generally just a, not much, it is a support network and we are there for that, but it's just, as anyone who's been through the process, as I'm sure you're probably aware as well, your friendship groups change massively.
Yeah.
As to who, some of your friends will step up and family members. I know some of our family members have been amazing at the way they stepped up and I wouldn't have expected that. But then friends you think that will step up and sort of be great, it's not their time in their lives for that sort of thing, so they sort of drift out, but new friends come in and doing that, and that's what I see the dad's group as. It's just a new group of friends and support who've got experiences of dealing with similar things, you'll be down the park and your kids could play up, and another dad will say, or another parent will say, oh, that's fine, that's absolutely normal. My child does that all the time. You're thinking, it may be normal for that, but why they're doing it, the cause is a different effect.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I know that often, you know, speaking to different professionals and social workers, that often getting men to engage in support groups is not always that easy. I mean, of course, some men do, but it's predominantly women. I don't know whether that's a gross stereotype. I'm can see the complaint letters flooding in even as I say that. But what has made it distinctly different from, say, a female support group? Is it just, you know, what do you do differently? Why? How does it work?
I don't, honestly, I couldn't tell you why ours has been a success. We know a couple of other groups in our areas have struggled a little bit. And not just the female support groups, other support groups in our area have struggled a little bit. I think maybe we were just very fortunate and it was the right idea at the right time with the support of a social worker who really does push our case on. We've got a group of dads who have got such a wide-ranging set of experience. We've got headmasters in our group. We've got people who work for virtual schools. We've got everything within the group. So whenever anyone comes with an issue or something, it's someone's got a bit of advice or somewhere to point them in the right direction. I don't know. I think we've got a little bit for everyone in the group. I couldn't pinpoint why it's been what it is. I mean, we're talking about when the weather improves at some point, having a good old get together and a barbecue and really get everyone just seems to get on. It's just been the right group of people have come together at the right time to make it the success it has. And maybe that's been, as I say, maybe the last 18 months has been a bit advantageous to that as well.
Yeah.
Where people have, in the modern times, are more willing to look for support, especially men. So maybe it's just been the right thing at the right time. Other than that, I couldn't tell you.
Is it sort of constrained to the local authority or the RAA that you're in, or is it sort of broader than that?
At the moment, we've stuck to our local authority. It's anyone, you don't have to have adopted with our authority, but if you're in our area, within our authority, and you sort out the adoption support teams, then we're there for them. It's anyone living within our area. We've got a real spread over our area. We've got two or three live in my town. Wherever there's a new dad that comes to us, we've got someone there already. So it's quite nice. So yeah, at the moment, we're just in where our area is. We haven't got any plans to go any further at the moment.
Can I ask you what area it is, or is that...
It's fine. We're Hertfordshire.
All right. So, I mean, if anyone is listening and they're in Hertfordshire and they're a man, then get in touch
Get in touch, with social services, social worker in the area. They've all got our details, and we're quite happy to help out wherever we can. We ask the dads when we set it up, at what point do we think best that we can help other dads coming in? And we said once they've got a panel date set for approval to go into family finding, then we'll sort of happy to have them join the group. From that stage, that's what we thought we could best help from that stage forward. We've helped a few guys, not through panel, but as much as your social worker prepares you for panel, hearing it from another dad who maybe is a bit more plainly speaking and not so technical, and sort of things like that.
Excellent.
Especially things like explaining it, link maker as well. My social worker told me off when she heard how I described it, but I said, as weird as it sounds, the way I describe link maker is almost, especially when you need to narrow it down, and it's a little bit like exchange of mark. You've got to be very specific as to what you can do, what you're looking for, what your requirements are, and try not to look at everything else, because then it can be a bit, can't see the wood for the trees.
But sometimes that practical advice is really helpful, isn't it? Because social workers are often, I'm a social worker, so we can dance around stuff and speak in, flowery terms, when actually just a simple explanation that cuts to the chase is really helpful, isn't it?
Yes, I think it's, we found another point of view, we're looking at it from a dad's point of view who's been through the process, which you've got that experience with yourself, so that must be a massive help to you as a social worker. But a lot of the social workers in our area they've been females, and they've done a great job, but they can't, we look at it from a different point of view. Men and women, we look at things differently.
Yeah.
We just do so. And as social workers as a whole, you get used to speaking a certain terminology, I suppose.
Yeah.
And a way of putting things, as you say, men are generally, I think, we're quite blunt. We cut to the chase a little bit more.
Yeah.
And that's been a bit more helpful, I suppose.
No, that's fantastic. You've been so kind and generous with your time. Is there anything that you'd hoped I would ask you that you were desperate to say, or are you happy with where we've gone?
No, to be honest, no. The one thing I've done and I make a conscious effort of is I got a journal, a diary, and it's once a month or so I go in there and write into it, and it's not to me, to my daughter. So when things happen when she's old enough, she can get it and understand, well, why did you do this? Why did you do that? Well, my memory is bad at the best of times. I'd forget my wedding anniversary if it wasn't the same, my annual anniversaries, if it wasn't for the same weekend. So I'd forget them all. I forget my mother's birthday. So my memory's worse. But I write in the journal everything. And it's not me talking to her as she is now. It's me talking to her. She's going to be at 16, 17, 18 years of age.
Yeah.
When I say you've been an absolute nightmare, that's what I say. She's been that dad. That's what I write in there. I love you, but today you've really tested the boundaries. I really did not like you at times, but I still love you. I just didn't like you for half an hour today. And it's a very honest, and my wife's read it and she thinks, oof. But I'm not writing to her as a 3 or 4 year old. I'm writing it to her as a 16, 17, 18 year old, but 20, 22 year old, whatever she's going to be when she comes to write it.
And it's something she can have as she can be an old woman and look back at it and see.
Yeah. And hopefully that story will help with her getting her head around why we made certain decisions we made that affected her. Why did she go to school, that school? Why did she go to certain things? So just for her to maybe have a little bit of understanding as to our mindset.
Well, Dan, thank you so much for your time. And it's really interesting to hear your story and also get your sort of insight into working, supporting men and how that came about. And hopefully if we've got any Hertfordshire dads, they'll maybe key into that. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, more than welcome. We're out there to help.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, and stay well.
Yeah, and you too. Take care.